We pick up tonight where we left off the last time, and we were going through introduction to counseling, working our way into the principles and how we go about it, and so forth and so on. And so we'll start out tonight. I'm not going to go back and review any of the things that we've talked about, but we'll just continue right on by putting up the charts here tonight. Now, most of the problems that you're going to be dealing with are going to be of marital problems. Most of the problems that you're going to be having are going to be marital problems. And what really happens is that up there you've got those two little bears, and they obviously fall in love and getting married here, and everything is going to be happy. There's not going to be an unhappy day in all of their life and so forth and so on. But it's not long until things turn upside down. They don't see things eye to eye, and there's going to be marital problems. Now, then is when they're going to come to you, and they're going to say, fix it, and when do they want it fixed? Right now. Now, when I make these statements, I'm not condemning anybody for doing this and for wanting it fixed right now. When you go to a doctor and you want to get fixed, when do you want to get fixed? You go with flu or whatever it is. I mean, fix me and fix me right now. That's what we all want. And so that's what they're going to want you to do. So what you're going to have to do is you're going to have to learn what you can do and what you can't do. That is very important to always keep it in mind. Then number two, learn how to do what you can do and don't try to do what you can't do. Now, these are just simple things, but they're very important things, because unless you do this, you're not going to be able to do this over here. And that is, then learn how to go to sleep after you've done what you can. Now, that basically is what you need to learn how to do. Now, first of all, over there, number one, learn what you can do and what you can't do. Now, there are certain things that you can't do. And we talked about last week that there are certain problems that affect the mind of man that need medical attention. There are lots of them like this. One would be depression, and we'll talk about that. There are various kinds of depression. Now, some depression needs medical attention. If you try to handle that that needs medical attention, you're not going to solve it, and you're just going to prolong it and make it worse and worse and worse and worse. So you're going to have to learn to try to determine, can you help it or can you not help it? Last week I talked about sexual problems. Now, these are coming out more and more and more and more, and it's something that in this that I don't choose to do. There's two reasons. It's so time-consuming in dealing with something like this. The success rate is very minimal in really doing any good. The price that you have to pay is not only a long time, but then it's putting all of these perversions in your mind. And each person has his own set of perversions that you're going to be talking about. And the minute that you think that you've heard of everything, then the next guy that walks in, you're going to hear something new. And then the next guy is going to be something new. And so never an end to the differences between people. So in that one, that's something that I don't even choose to start to begin to get in. Now, in number two, learn how to do what you can do. That's what we're going to be talking about in this class, some how-tos and so forth as we go along. And then over here, learn how to go to sleep after you've done what you can. Last week we talked about this, and I was asking, how do you get these things out of your mind? Now, it's very important that we learn how to do this, to get them out and control them. Now, I'll tell you a little story about, I guess, the one thing that helped me most was when I was asked a question by my sister, who is a nurse, and I gave her an answer, and it was a good answer. I'm going to give it to you in just a minute. And then when I gave her this good answer, it hit me, oh, buddy, if there is anybody in the world guilty of this, you are. That I was guilty of doing the same thing. And that really was the thing that started to make a change in me. I decided to take my own advice is where it was. Now, that sounds dumb, and you got a point. I am dumb, but that's really the way it happened. Now, here was her point. She's a nurse, and she was working in an emergency. And so you go in there, you hear people brought in automobile accidents and motorcycle accidents and heads laid open. And every time that the door opens, you know that a little child or somebody's going to be brought in a horrible, horrible condition. So they're brought in, and then she'd work on them and take care of them and so forth and try to make them comfortable. And then when it came time to leave, she had a guilty conscience for leaving. She just couldn't leave. In other words, here's somebody, and we talked about a motorcycle accident. She was working with this one, that this kid was on a motorcycle and going down the road, and his head was mutilated, and he's in there in such terrible pain and so forth. And she would go home then, and she couldn't get it out of her mind, and she couldn't wait to get back the next morning to try to help him and so forth. And so it was just about to drive her crazy. And she was asking me, what do you do? What can I do, and what should you do to keep from going crazy? And so really what I told her was this. And then I saw her point of view, and then it helped see mine. I said, look, that is a job that you have of doing that. Now, if you quit your nursing and you weren't up there, would that boy still have had that accident? And the answer to that is yes, right? In other words, he didn't have the accident because she's a nurse. Now, she is a nurse. She was up there. And so she's there and capable of helping him now. All right. He had the accident because he brought it on himself. Now, he brought it on himself. He may have just been terribly guilty. He may not even have been guilty. It may have been somebody else that ran in front of him. But be that as it may, he was on the motorcycle. Whether he broke the law or whether he didn't break the law, he chose to ride the motorcycle, and now he's hurt, and he's up there, and he's going to be hurt whether you're there or not. And when he leaves, when you leave and you go home, he's going to be hurting whether you leave or whether you stay. Isn't that true? In other words, if she said, well, I'll just stay another 8 hours, you see, so I can sit here because the guy is crying and yelling and so forth. So you stay another 8 hours. What's that going to do? He has so much crying that he has to do, so much pain that he has to endure, and the best thing that you can do to help that fella is when your 8 hours is up, go home, relax, enjoy yourself, get a good night's sleep, get up in the morning, come back refreshed, and start over again. Or you can go home and, you can lay there. You can roll and toss in bed, think of that poor guy all night, knowing what's going through his mind, and then you get up after not sleeping but about an hour or so, go up there tomorrow, and how much has that helped him? And obviously, none. And the advice is just so simple, you know, that anybody can see it, but then that's when it hit me. Hey, why don't you take your own advice? Because people would come in with these problems, and then they would go home just heartbroken and so forth. And I'd go and I'd roll and I'd toss because I didn't solve them that night. Well, you can't solve them that night. In other words, as a nurse, can she cure that guy in one night? No. And you cannot solve these problems in one night. And we have to learn that. Now, this is very important. I know it's elementary. I know every one of you know everything I'm saying. And you say, get on to something else. But this right here is very, very important for us to understand. Now, the reason it's important is this. There are some people that will counsel and help people, and there are other people that have no interest in it. I don't know how many people I've had to tell me. They say, I don't know why you do what you do. I wouldn't do it for anything in the world. I can't understand why you do that. See? And they sit there and they talk to me, and one person tries to said, you're going to kill yourself. Just get out of it. You didn't solve it. Just don't. I mean, you didn't cause it. That's stupid to try to deal with all those problems and and so forth. Now, there's a reason for that. Today, in today's culture, they call it givers and takers, and there are certain individuals that give, and there are certain individuals that take. Now, a taker is not a good counselor because a taker is thinking about himself. He's thinking about how can I make me comfortable. A giver is always thinking about how can I make someone else comfortable. Now, you generally marry the opposites. If you're a giver, your wife's a taker, and vice versa, generally speaking. Now, I don't want you to think about that this is, you're all give and all take. I mean, we all have give and take to us, but I'm talking about the predominance that are in it. And we'll talk about that again in marital problems. But here's the whole point. That if you are involved in counseling, if people come to you to get counseling, and you give it, you're a giver. That really is what it is. If you're not, you're going to go through it once or twice, and then you're going to cut it off, and you're not going to do it anymore. And there are a lot of people that people would not go to at all because they feel a certain aura, and they understand that they're what is called givers. I mean, they're what is called takers. And then there are other people that seem to draw people. Now, if you're counseling, you're going to be of that nature. Now, if you are of that nature, then you're going to lay home at night worrying about why you didn't solve that problem. You're going to hate that because it's just your very nature. So what I'm saying is, you have to learn this. It is so simple, anybody knows it, but we don't practice it. See, that's the point. And so, when I gave her that little speech, and I saw how she was just right at the bottom, and I was right at the bottom too, at that time, we both had bottomed out about the same time, it hit me, and I said, that's what I'm going to do. And keeping that in my mind, that when I deal with that, that has helped me tremendously. That's what really makes me go home and sleep. Somebody comes in and they have problems. I didn't cause the problems. I feel sorry for them. You have to have a certain empathy and feeling for people who are in trouble. But you have to understand, I didn't cause it. If I were not here, they would still have this problem. And if I carry it home with me, I can't help them any when I'm there. So what I have to do is to take care of myself during that period of time. And you just develop it. And I pretty well can do that now. When I walk out that door, I just turn the switch and bing, it's gone. And I was telling her, that's what a doctor has to do. I mean, he's up there and he's operating, he's taking care of all these people. But when is convenient time for a doctor to go home when all of his patients are feeling well and they don't need him and nobody wants to ask him a question and so forth? When is that? It never would. It'd be 24 hours a day. So if a doctor stayed there, how long would he live? Every doctor would have, 48 hours or something like that to practice medicine, and they would be dead. So the best thing that a doctor can do is go in, operate on a person, patch him up, roll him back, let him cry and scream, and then go home, take his wife out to dinner and have a good time. Doesn't that sound cruel? But I'm trying to put it in that way so that we'll see that it's not cruel. See, that's what he has to do to get peace of mind so he can go back today, the next day, and begin all over again. That really is the key to learning how to sleep over there. So, as we start out then, we're going to be talking about how to try to put some of these things then back together. Now, as we start out with marriage, we need to understand that when people get married, things are going to change. They are not going to stay the same. And soon our relationships are multiplied. When you get married, little kids come on the way, and if you think that there are problems before their kids, then wait till after their kids. Now this again is a problem, because what do a lot of people do to cure their problems? Two people get married, they're arguing and bickering. What do they do to cure the problems? Have kids. And then we'll cure our problems. We'll have this sweet little kid, you know, that's there. We can take turns cuddling it and so forth and put it to bed, and so we'll be happy. And then they, as soon as the kid is born, the first thing they look at, you know, its head's all out of shape and it's there crying this, I didn't know it was like this. And then the troubles really start. Now that is the introduction into the real world. Now, whatever problems mom and dad are having will also be multiplied when the children come along. Look at the relationship that you really have in a family. Now, as you start to deal with a family. If you're dealing with an automobile engine, what do you have to know to be an automobile mechanic if you're going to deal with an automobile engine? What's necessary to know?
How all relates to each other.
Yeah, all the parts and how they relate one to the other. And if you don't know that, you're not going to be an automobile mechanic. Now, the same thing is true in counseling. You're going to have to know all the parts. Here walks in a man and a woman. Well, this is simple. There are just two people there, and tell them. And I had one person to walk up to me, a very prominent lady, and said, ask about these people. And said, why don't you just tell them to quit that? God doesn't want them to do that. Boy, I mean, she really got on me. And I wasn't dealing with it because I hadn't told her, you quit that. I got, well, I've told them that, but, you know, it doesn't quite come to pass. So it's not just one man and one woman. You look at it and there's something wrong, you quit that. See, as you look at it, there's a relationship that dad has to mom and mom has to dad. What's the difference between them? They're not the same.
Different point of view.
They're a different point of view. Totally different point of view. See it. And then the dad has to the children and the mom has to the children. Is there a difference in that? The way dad and mom look at the kids? Oh yeah. See, totally different. And then the way the children look at dad and the way the children look at mom. Difference in there? Oh yeah. And then the parents to the children. What's the difference in up there, dad to the children and parents to the children? Well, there one relationship is where dad has a relationship with the children, mom has a relationship with the children, and then there is that mystic relationship that both of them have with the children as a unit. And kids know this. They know how to get in there and cut all that up. See, they're smarter than we are. They know how to whack it and say, here's what we can do here, and here's what we can do here, and get in there. They're born with it, I think. Now then, there's parents to the children, and then there's children to the parents. So there's all of these things that come into play when we're dealing with these problems. Now, many times, especially in today's culture, you have people who are divorced and remarried. And now then, look what happens. Now you might say, but people shouldn't do that. That's not your problem, whether people shouldn't do something. People do, you see, get married. They do have problems. They do divorce. Some of the divorce is right. Some is wrong, but they do divorce. And then you have his kids and her kids all put in there together. Now here are the eight that we had a minute ago. Look at what happens in here. Now then you add the stepchildren to the stepdad, the stepdad to the stepchildren to stepmom, the stepmom to the stepchildren to the real mom, stepdad, the stepdad and the real mom to the stepchildren, and the stepchildren and the real dad to the stepmom and the real dad to the stepchildren, and mom's stepchildren to dad's stepchildren, and dad's stepchildren to mom's stepchildren, and you just keep on going. See, that's in there. So how many things can go wrong when you have this? And so you begin to see that in marriages like that, that there's going to be just problem after problem after problem after problem that are involved in there. Now, as we start out in this, we see it is the best never to let this happen by using preventative measures known as premarital counseling. Now, that is the first thing we want to be talking about. Before we get into talking about how do you put a marriage back together, let's talk about how you keep one from falling apart. And that is of having premarital counseling. Now, before the wedding ever comes to pass, you get them together when they're like this, instead of getting them together when they're like this. See, when they're looking at each other in various ways. Now, the good and the bad is that both are excited. Both are willing to listen. Oh, yeah. See? And so there's a great willingness. Both are wanting happiness. They have a common goal. Both will talk at this time. But both will be shocked because you expose their weaknesses. Both will try to deny that there's any problems. Both will want to get it over with as quickly as possible. Okay, we'll have premarital counseling, but we have more important things to do because the wedding is right down the road, and so we don't want this unimportant stuff because we must do the important stuff like the bridesmaids' dresses and the cake and all the important things, see, that we must do. Now, both will tend to agree with anything you say. You have to keep that in mind at this time that's when, they'll, and you understand that? Oh, yes, yeah. You know, they'll understand it. And both will readily agree to change, but will they change? See, is the whole point. Now, you as you start doing this, you say, okay, how do you proceed? What do you do? What is a good way of sitting down with some young people and talking to them and trying to analyze certain things? Now, that's what I want to talk about in this class tonight. Some things that you go at with these people, with these in here, to try to prevent any problems. Now, first of all, right here, you need to make this clear. As you start out. Now, we're going to talk about various things that you consider, religion and money and various things like this. But as you start, you ought to talk about this, and you want to make it clear in here to both parties what they're getting into. And that is that if he wasn't courteous before he marries you, he won't be after. Now, every bride believes she's going to change her husband. Right, Sue? It just built in to a woman to believe she can change a man. And so every one of them says, well, yeah, he's this way now, but then I will have this persuasion over him and so forth, and so I'll change him. Now, you have to get them to see that courtship is a time to find out if they measure up to your standards. Because if they're not courteous while they're courting, they're certainly not going to be after they get married. If he drinks, smokes, and cusses before, he will after. Now, again, this is important because every young girl thinks, well, when we get married, I'll stop that in my house. You know, there won't be any of that going on. Yeah, there will be. There will be. Because just like a girl thinks that she can change a man, how does a man think when the bride tries to change him? Hey, wait a minute. Who's the head of this house? I'm the head of this house, see? And so as she tries this, he's going to rebel. And so it's just not going to happen. If he says ugly things to you before, it will get worse after. If he slaps you before, now number four is very, 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 very important. If he slaps you before, he'll beat you after. If a man slaps a girl while he's going with her, you can just mark it down, he's going to be a wife beater. That's all that there is to it. And when you're dealing with a wife beater, it's not just somebody that beats a wife, but it's somebody that has a mental problem. And these men, many of them, all of them, that beat their wives, really don't want to beat their wives. And what they do is that they beat them, and then, you know what they do right after they beat them? They get down on their hands and knees, literally, beg, cry, promise, I promise I'll never do it again. I was a total fool. They cry their eyes out. They beg for forgiveness. They give her presents. They treat her nice. They do all of this. And she then said, well, okay, you know, then everything will be okay. Then they'll beat her again. And then they do it. And the cycle just goes on and on and on and on. They have a problem. And it's a deep psychological problem. So it's the same thing as if one of them came and said, okay, do you have any medical problems? The guy says, nope, I'm in perfect health. I have cancer of the lungs, but that's all, you know, that I have. And I'm not going to let it bother me. What's the chances of that marriage lasting, you see? We'd say, well, you need some medical treatment. No, I don't. Okay, you're just that certain he needs it. Now, if he's sloppy before, he'll be sloppier after, and so forth. So keep that in mind as you're measuring them up and as you're looking at them and analyzing them and trying to pick out some things. You're going to have to pick out, you're going to have to start pulling some things in and so forth. And you're going to have to be able to ask some questions as you look at him, and there he sits, an unkept individual and so forth. And you ask her, you know, do you like everything about him? And, I just love him to pieces. Well, everything, you know, everything, 100%, everything. You know, well, that's pretty good, you know, but, I mean, there's not one thing. There's not one thing. The way he blows his nose, or the way he spits on the ground, you just love that. Well, he does have a, you know, habit that I don't like, that, you know, doing some particular thing. Okay, you know, that's not too bad. What does he, you kind of work into it like that, you know, how do you like the way he dresses and the way he looks, and every time you see him, are you proud to be seen with him and so forth? Well, no, you know, but he's promised me he'll get better, you know, and so forth. You need to talk and get this out, because if you can get that solved before they get married, then you're going to keep a lot of problems out there. Okay.
Well,
yeah.
I don't mean to interrupt your class, but just so everybody knows, apparently it's hailing outside. It's coming so hard that that's what we're all hearing. They're looking around. Sounds like a fire.
I wonder what everybody's looking at.
A fire.
I thought a rattlesnake crawled through the room right there. All right. Now, you've all seen this chart right here, and I'm not going to deal with it here to any great extent. However, we probably should, as far as tapes and so forth are concerned. But what you need to do with them is start out and start out with this chart, really, and talk about it in this way. We'll just go through it quickly in here. But as you begin, you start out, you say, okay, now let's take a look at what a marriage is. Now, before we get to the marriage, there is a man and a woman. So let me draw you a picture of a man. And then you draw four servants over here. And then write them in there. And what scripture do you go to show that? Luke 2:52. That's right. And so you go back over there then and you read in Genesis where God created a man. Now, what did he create? Right there is what he created. Then it says it is not good for man to be alone. Now, it doesn't say that a man is not good. It just says it's not good for man to be alone, which means that a man has a problem. Now, we're in Genesis 2. All right, so God then did two things, and I think that it's important for them to see this, that he had all the animals to pass before Adam, and he had two purposes. He said, you give them all a name, and what's the other thing that Adam was to do?
Find
an answer to his problem. All those animals, you find you an answer to your problems, whatever problems you have. All the animals went by, he didn't find them. So God then put him to sleep, took out a rib, and made him a help, H-E-L-P, and then the other word is meat. He didn't make a help meat, he made a help meat for Adam. Now, the word help means an answer to. Now, you have an answer to a problem. This woman over here is the answer to his problems. And meat means adequate, suitable. It is an answer that is adequate and suitable. So everything that this man over here lacked in the woman, he made. So he made another man, is what he did. And in English, the word woman comes from man with a womb. Womb man. So he made another. All right, then you can start talking about, now here are the differences. Of course, the first differences that you see are in the body. And you can talk about the differences there. Of course, this is in the sexual realm and in the strength and so forth. And each one of them needs to know that there is a difference in that body. Now, you might say, well, everybody knows that. Yes and no. How many men expect women to do as much physical labor as they do? Quite a few. You need to understand that there's a difference in the body structure and so forth. So you talk about that, and you can talk about is there a difference in the sexual needs of the body? You see, the way men think, the man is the pursuer. He loves to pursue, a woman loves to be pursued. And so you can talk about the difference, and as they're fulfilling their sexual desires, one with the other, they look at sex in a totally different way. They view it in a different way and so forth. So you can talk about it in that way. Then you talk about your mind. Now then here you have two minds. And we know that men and women think differently. And recently it has been proven now that there is a physical difference in the brain of a man and the brain of a woman. There's a physical difference in the male and the female brain of a rat. Also, they found those differences, and women tend to think with both hemispheres of their brain, And a man thinks with one hemisphere, and then he'll jump over to the other, and then he'll jump back over here. He is more calculating, and he will give a lot of thought to something and calculate it and have a lot of reasons of why he does certain things. He might come home and ask his wife, you know, I've come to this conclusion, what do you think? And she just immediately jumps and says, yeah, yes or no. She may not be able to give you a reason. And so you think, well, she's crazy. Well, what kind of thinking do we call that? A woman's intuition. What we mean by that is that it's so weird that we don't have a name for it, we don't know what to do, so we just call it intuition. She just reaches up and pulls something out of the air and says, this is it. See? But that's not what she does. She has a thinking pattern that is just as definite as a man's. And God made us different in that way. Larry?
Well, I was going to illustrate what you just said. 2 days ago, I asked my wife if it'd be good to have a particular couple come over for dinner on Friday night. She said, no, I don't think so. I think it'd be better for them to come in the summertime.
Good reason. Right? Good reason. Sure.
I never did figure out why she felt that way. When I asked her why she felt that way, she said, well, I don't know, but just that mm-hmm. seems like that'd be the case.
Mm-hmm. That's the way it is. See, now, for a man to say, no, I think summertime, you say why, he could give you the reasons. He'd say, well, here, here, and here, and here. See? Mm-hmm.
There's no way to describe what you're just talking about, and that's the right brain, left brain concept.
Mm-hmm.
And the logical, analytic view, point mm-hmm. of view is generally left brain function.
Mm-hmm.
And the holistic, intuitive, mm-hmm. Whatever else is right brain. Although I really think that everybody actually can function with both of these modes of analysis or thinking.
Oh, yeah.
But are you just saying then that men generally tend to be
predominantly
left
yeah.
brain oriented,
right.
whereas women tend to be more right brain.
Right. Mm-hmm. And women tend to think with both sides, just they can go to both sides the way you can go to one side and deal with it in there. And they found that. You know, you go to one side and you jump over, but you jump back. But a man tends to think, he has a membrane between his two hemispheres of his brain, and a woman doesn't. And so they a woman is more holistic like that. Now, do any of you guys have any intuitions? Do you ever have a feeling that you shouldn't do something, or you should do something that you don't have reasons for, but you say, I just don't feel like it would be the best thing to do? Well, sure, we do. And so, can a woman think logically? Why, of course they can. See, you can say, okay, I don't want the intuitive stuff. You give me 3 reasons why we shouldn't do this. They can sit down and do it. But that is not the normal way, you see, it goes about. So talk about that and show that. And what you need to do, especially, is to get the man to appreciate that about the woman. Now, you don't have to try to get the woman to appreciate it about the man nearly as much. Have any idea why?
She already knows intuitively.
She knows it. That's right. She is more introspective. She looks within relationships and looks within an individual. And she is choosing that man not so much on his outward looks as on his inward looks. And he's choosing her mainly because of her outward looks. That's about as far as he gets until after he marries her and then finds out she doesn't think and so forth like he does. And then troubles come in. So it's the man that doesn't understand this. And if he can understand this, then he can appreciate it much more. Now, the other thing right here is the social. Any difference between the social life of a man and a woman? When women get together, what they talk about? When men get together, what they talk about? Why, of course, there is. Just a vast difference of what a person, what a man wants to do and what a woman wants to do. Now, I'm not saying that all men are involved in sports and all women like to go to the opera. That is not true. But men tend to have their social life geared in an opposite way than what a woman does. And if you married and you both like the same thing in the social realm, why, you're lucky. Lyle, how do you like to go shopping with your wife?
I figure out ways to avoid it.
Yeah, see? You can go, but it's not the biggest thing in life. And so, socially speaking, and so forth. Then make a big play on this right here, that when God in His wisdom made man and woman, He made the spirit exactly alike. in 1 Peter 3:7, a woman is a joint heir with man. And in Christ, there is neither male or female. So he made them the same. Now, why would that be wise from man's viewpoint? As we look at it, we see all the rest of it is different, totally different, just opposite. But in this one thing, it's totally the same.
Free will of God.
What's this?
Free will to do what God says. Same free will to do.
Okay, give you the same free will, but we might work that up there in the mind. Suppose that your spirit is not quite as good as Carl's. You're an inferior being spiritually to Carl. If this were true, then a woman would truly be inferior to a man, wouldn't she? See, if that's true. Let's suppose that a man married a chimpanzee. Is there any difference between the man and the chimpanzee? Would you say one is more important than the other? Just no, total person. A man marries a chimpanzee. Is there any difference between the man and the chimpanzee? Why, of course there is. See, a vast difference in a man and a chimpanzee. So you could see in that situation where the chimpanzee doesn't have the spirit, you'd say, oh yeah, the man is of much more value. Well, suppose that he had created a woman halfway between a chimpanzee and a man. In other words, she wouldn't be of equal value is what I'm getting at. Now, the woman is a spiritual being. Her spirit is of the same nature as man. Means she is on an equality with man. She has the value of a man. She has the worth of a man. She has all those qualities. And so man then means to look at woman on an equality in that sense. Understanding that she's different from him in various realms, but she's the same man, and so they are of the same value before God. All right. Now, that will generally take about one session as you're talking about it, not the way we do it, but we preach on it and so forth, and you know that it'll take about one session. Now, what I do is I would close the session with this. I would say, now here we've got all these lines going across right here, and you can look at this thing kind of like a musical instrument. That if you have a musical instrument with the strings going, now if those strings are all exactly the right tension, then you can make a beautiful music. But if one string gets out, what happens? It's not going to be pretty. Now, if one string on a guitar gets loosened up, and you have that thud, then you try to tune the rest of the guitar to match that, what happens? In a little while, you've lost everything, right? See, your whole musical instrument is shot. Now, here's what happens. That we have differences, and they'll start in one of these realms in here. They'll start in there somehow or another, and I make up a scenario of some kind, you see, that a man comes home, and he is been kicked around by his boss or something, and he's all out of sorts, and as he walks in, he sees the house dirty, and it's irritating to him, and maybe he's asked her to clean it up last week or something. And so this time, with his mind right here, why, he just jabs into her and says, well, you lazy slob, you, what you been doing, sitting down all day or something? And so he insults her. Now, when he insults her, a principle is involved, and that is, for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. Now, she then may come back at him, boom, boom, you too, I don't see you working too hard, you didn't fix the roof, you didn't mow the grass, and so forth, and blah, blah. Now, what's the man going to do then when she bites his head off? He's going to come back again. Now, about this time, she's going to shut up. The woman will shut up. But the battle is not over. See, it's just beginning. Now, he will generally win the mind, the battle of the mind, because he'll use his authority and his cutting remarks and so forth. He'll usually win that. But when he does that, then the woman will generally respond with this up here. And that is that she now is going to deny him his sexual desires. And she may do it ugly, and she may do it sweet, but it doesn't make any difference how she does it. See? Of saying, I think I'll go to bed early tonight. You know, I'm tired, and so forth. And she denies him of that. How's he going to feel? Well, she wants to act that way and play that game. Okay. And then he's going to come back. And he's going to deny her something. Now then, as the head of the house, he's going to come back and he knows she wants the car tomorrow to go shopping or something, and all of a sudden he needs the car. And she said, well, I didn't think you needed it. Well, it's changed. I do. Well, why do you need it? It's none of your business. Do I have to tell you everything? So he takes the car and he leaves. How's she going to feel all day sitting there? Just boiling. See? Boiling. And you can see it just goes on, back and forth in this. Will it affect our social life any? Supposed to go to a party tonight. How's the party going to be? We're either not going or going to act ugly and embarrass the other person. And if you're going to go somewhere where she wanted to go, you're not going to want to go, or vice versa. And will it get into the spiritual realm? Yeah, then it's going to get in there. Well, we're nothing but a bunch of hypocrites anyway, so why go worship and so forth? And you'll quit. In other words, you can just keep building the thing up, building it, and keep going. The worst marriage I've ever seen in my life began in this way. It began in a very simple way. This marriage was a pitiful marriage for 40 years. He broke her bones. She aimed a gun at him and had it jerked out of her hand, or she had shot him. And I dealt with them. I kept track one time. It was over 1,000 hours, and I quit keeping track of just in office time of dealing with it. And there was never any improvement made. And they would both just, they really want to go to heaven, really want to try and so forth like this. But it started in this way, that the guy, in his childhood, I'm sure that he had seen his mother dominate the dad and so forth in there, so he didn't like a dominating woman. Well, anyway, he married one, and so he didn't know it though. And they were still in college. Got married. They had a shower, and they went to the motel. Then after the shower, they had married, got married, had a reception, I guess, and had the shower there. They went to the motel, took their presents there, and they got two presents of the same thing. And they didn't tell me what it was, but it's in a little box about this long. And so he looked at this and he said, hey, keep that box. I want that box for something in his school there. And she said, okay. So the next morning they get up, they pack their suitcase to get ready to leave, and he goes over and he looks in the garbage can, and the box is in the garbage can. And he flipped his lid. What kind of woman did I marry? I told her specifically, I want that one box. That's the only one I told her I wanted. And which one did she throw away? That one. He turned around and lit into her, rang, 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 and then she lit into him, rang, 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 and for 40 years, it went on. And I could spend 20 years telling you about all the stuff, you see, been involved in there. Now, the whole thing, though, came out, and I asked her, I said, why did you throw the box away? And she said, I didn't. She said, we had two presents like that. I threw one box away and saved the other one for him.
Who's going to say that exact thing she didn't? Huh? Who could have told you that?
Yeah. Uh-huh. So, in other words, that's where it started. See? And it was not forgotten. And 40 years later, that was still built up in their mind. See, in there. And that box was still being argued about. And she was trying to take the passive view. I saved your box. Well, I know you did, but why didn't you tell me? I mean, it was in there, and when I turned around, you know, then you sassed me back or something. Well, the way you sassed me is the reason I sassed you, and blah, blah, blah. And then they get in an argument again. See, and I, whoa, whoa, hold it. See? And do that. Now, it started out with a little thing like that. And so, spend some time talking about that, letting people see that those things really do make a great difference. Now, in the marital realm, as you are counseling them in here, there are the areas. Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. There are the areas that we're going to be talking about. Now, we're going to take them up next week. But as you start out, there is where really you finally boil it down and start taking them up one at a time that is in there. But before you get to that, in other words, what I'm going to show you now is that you're going to work your way around to religion, friends, finances, sexual, children, recreation, and in-laws. You talk about that. But before you get to that, I'd spend a little time analyzing the situation and trying to put it together there a little bit. Some other things here a little bit more. Well, I'm putting this thing together right now. There we go. Now, here's what I'd do. I'd start out in your first session and talk about and let them know that you understand your wedding day is the greatest day, you know, of your life. Now, how are they going to feel if they don't think that you understand it? So let them know that's just great. It's the greatest day of your life, but I want you to go into it so it can continue on. See, so it can be happy. That's what we are here for, is to try to make it so that it is really happy. Then, I point out to them that preparation for happy marriage begins before the wedding, and it looks past the wedding. You over there's preparation, you have a wedding. Now then, what happens after that wedding takes place? And that's where then I point out to them that if the same guy that kissed you before he married you can end up over here beating you after he married you. There. Or you can have this guy over here that's nice to you, and he kissed you before the wedding, and he'll love you, and adore you, and serve you, and care for you, and esteem you, and sacrifice, and protect, and enjoy doing all of it. This is what you want. You don't want to end up in the other realm. So now, let's take a look at some of the things that we need to do in looking at it. I point out that we need to see some things that are important, things that aren't important. And then there are things that appear to be important that really not, and some things that are not important, they look like they are. That's what this counseling session is for, is to try to figure out the things that are really important in here. I'm going to flip through some of these to get down to this right here. Okay, here it is. All right, you start out. Right there is one of the most dangerous things in all the world. Is a teenage marriage when they come to you. The success of teenage marriages is very small. Teenage marriages have the highest divorce rate of all marriages. It's just something that goes up in there. I don't think that I have it here. I think it's about 7 out of 10, something like that, of the teenage marriages that actually fall apart. And the reason for that is when people get married in their teens, they're not mature enough to know what marriage is. They are sexually mature, and so they look at marriage as a sexual activity, but beyond that, they don't look at it too much. They'll look at it, I've got a job, I'll work, and you know, and that is about it. And so when they get into real life, then they're not capable of handling it then. What we need to look at really as far as teenage marriages are concerned is don't look at past things. They might call your attention to somebody in the Bible or somebody in the Bible lands and some other culture. They get married when they're 12 or 13. And they do that. But don't look at other cultures. What we've got up here, you've got to look at America in 1989 or 90, not in Canaan, in 1989 BC or Iran at the present time. Now, if you're in Iran, you can get married when you're 12. There's no problem. And your marriage will last. You know why it will last? You get a divorce, they shoot you. Yeah, it's just that simple. See, so you're not going to have any divorces there. But you're living in America in the 20th century, where society is permeated with women's lib, and equality of sexes, women in the workplace, and divorces, and single life are glamorized. Now, there's nothing wrong with equality of the sexes when you look at it in a certain way. But what I'm talking about is this. When anybody looks at the sexes being equal, there's going to be problems. Because a male is a male and a female is a female, and there are differences that those other circles you see are talking about. And a man needs to treat a woman a certain way, and a woman needs to treat a man a certain way. And unless they do that, there's going to be problems. And so when these teenagers come in and they've been permeated with this idea of the uniclothes and the unisex and the equality and there's no differences, all of this, they're just going to be problems. That's all that there is. What have we got down there? Women in the workplace. What's wrong with that? Anything wrong with a woman working? There's nothing wrong with a woman working. But when a teenage girl goes out and she's working, are there any dangers out there? You bet your life there's dangers out there. When problems start at home, and when that old boy comes home tonight and he's sloppy and he's ugly and he mistreats her, she goes to work the next day and somebody treats her nice and carries her something for her and says some nice things to her, what's she going to be thinking? Is she going to be measuring up that guy to what she has at home? See? Yeah. And right there, there's lots of problems in there. The single life is glamorized, and it is today. I mean, if you want everything in the world, be single, right? That's the greatest life that there is. How do you know that? You hear it all the time. I don't want to be tied down. I want to have my freedoms, and you know, that way you have it all. Now, anything wrong being single? No. But what's wrong with a teenager, especially, getting married and living in a society where the single life is glamorized? What happens at about 21 or 22 or 23?
Feel like he's missed out.
That's right. I missed out. Both the man and the woman. I missed out. I want to go back. See, I want to recover those years that I missed out. And then they're going to try the single life. And so in this culture today, it's terribly hard for a teenage marriage to get along. It's about 7 out of 10 end up in divorces. Now, another thing is money problems that you need to look at. Now, we're going to talk about money problems a different night. I'm just bringing this up right now to have it there. As you're analyzing them, you can kind of see that you can love it too much, you can appreciate it too little. You can have too much or you can have too little. And all of these things will do damage, and especially if you get it where the young girl grows up in a wealthy home and the guy is a very poor boy, will there be problems? Yeah, because the way he looks at money and the way she looks at money. And she'll look at it in a different way. Now, does that mean that she looks at it in the wrong way? Is that what we're saying? No. Generally speaking, the people that have money look at it more appropriately than the people who do not have money. That's the general thing, because they grow up with it, they know how to use it, they use it properly, and somebody who's never had it doesn't know how to use it. The other day I went up here with Wendell Smith and we visited a llama farm. Now I grew up on a farm. I know all about animals. I mean, you know, I shoe horses and all about those farm animals. I went up there and they had a camel. And that camel came and stuck his head over the fence. Now guess what I didn't do? I didn't go up and pet him. I don't know anything about camels. Is the point that I'm getting at. See? I don't know anything about them. I don't know whether they bite. Well, I've heard they spit at you. I don't know whether they'll slap their head around and knock you down. I don't know anything about camels. Well, if I don't know anything about camels, and somebody else knows something about camels, who can handle camels better? It's obvious in the camel realm. Well, if a young lady grows up having money, and a young man grows up not having money, who obviously is going to be able to handle it better than the other? She is. But how's he going to look at her? As the rich little girl that wants to spend all the money. See? And she goes, well, what is wrong with this? See? And so there will be problems, is all that we're getting at in that realm. Now, another thing that you need to find out is, can they communicate? Very, very important. Can they talk? Do they talk? Now, what will they say when you ask them? Do you guys talk? What will they say?
Yes.
Yeah, oh yeah, sure. Huh? Yeah. Guess what the number one complaint of women are? All over the nation, Christians and non-Christians. Mike, you're laughing. What does your wife complain about?
Don't talk enough.
Don't talk enough. That's right. See? You won't talk enough. A lack of communication. Now, if you don't talk to them when you're going with them, how much are you going to talk to them after you're married?
Even less.
See? Yeah, it's going to be even less. So, can you communicate? And so you need to find that out. And, oh yeah, yeah. She tells me what to do and I do it. You know, I listen. You know, that's one form of communication and that's what he will think. See? That's going to cause problems. Now, it'll not only cause problems with him. How's he going to feel later on about this relationship? She tells me what to do and I do it. He's going to resent it, isn't he? Once he becomes the head of the family and he gets tired of that, he's going to rebel. But how's she going to feel about it? This woman's doing all this talking, coming in, he won't talk. You know what's going to happen in a couple of years? She goes, why don't you ever talk to me? I want to talk to you. Why don't you ever talk to me? And remember, that's going to be one of the major problems, is that lack of communication. So, talk to them about that. And they need to learn how to communicate. Then, is there an addiction problem? Now, if there is, there is a big problem. You and I know that, but do they know it? What do you suppose a couple of people in love will say about an addiction problem? No. No. You know, no, there's no problem. Well, does he drink? Not. You know. No. Nah. What does that mean?
Yes.
If you ask me, Lowell, do you drink? And I say, no. Nah. That means yes. Yeah, you see, that's what it means. So then, deal with that. Now, if he drinks and they don't admit that he drinks, then there's a real problem. If he just drinks a little bit, then generally, 9 times out of 10, there's a real problem. If a person drinks a little bit, and then you ask him, you know, do you drink? Yes. Just like that. Yes. I have one beer a week. Now, I'm not upholding one beer a week. I think we ought to be teetotalers. But what I'm saying is, if he answers that way, that's different than in saying, no, there's no problem. What do you drink? Well, no. Do you drink any? Do you ever have a beer or a drink of alcoholic beverage? Well, sure, sometimes. Now we're turning it around. See, how often? Just special occasions. What's your special occasions? Well, you know, just, you know, not often. Yeah, I know. What is it? New Year's? Well, yeah, I drink on New Year's. Then you don't drink till next New Year's. Only on New Year's. Well, no. You know, birthday and 4th of July. You know, I thought too bad. When's the last time you had a drink? Well, Saturday. What was a special occasion? And you get down, and then I've had them to start out like this, and you get down, and they drink every day. See? And you work it down like that. So don't take those answers. You see, like that. Kind of dig in a little bit. Now, when they do that, then you know that there's a problem. So if they deny it, there is. If they don't totally quit, there is a problem. And boy, they're getting into a big one. Got down here today. Cocaine is a white man's. Does the white man what alcohol is to the Indian? 1,000 years from now, the Indians will be able to drink the alcohol. The white man can sniff cocaine because the weak will have died and the strong will have survived. It generally just works like this. But we're not living 1,000 years from now. We're living right now. And when you have this thing, you've got problems. So I was listening to the radio today. We're on a call-in program. They had people call in. One guy, some university professor, was saying, some people can take cocaine, crack cocaine, and it doesn't hurt them at all, but very few. So they were asked people call in. Are you one of these that can take crack cocaine and it doesn't hurt you? So a guy called in. Yeah, I'm one. You know, and I take it and, you know, just once a month or something like this. So they were interviewing him. You know, well, you can then quit anytime you want to. Well, not when you start, you can't quit. you know, till you've run out of money, you know, that day, but then you don't have to take it again for a while. And then another guy calls in and he said, I started last week. Last week was my first time. And he said, the only thing that stopped me was I emptied my bank account. If I could have, I would have sold a kid. And he said, I'm serious. And he said, I would have killed for some more if I could. And I said, once you get in there, that's where you get into it. And he said, I want to tell you that that guy that's on the other end of the line is a knothead. See? And really, that's what you find. So these people saying, oh, I can take it or leave it and so forth. Don't you buy that. Don't you believe that. I'm not saying that it can't happen, but I'm saying that it happens, you know, about every time that the sun falls out of the sky. Now, on alcohol today, people say, well, that's not too bad. You know, cocaine is bad. But what we've got in here is, and you can't read that up there, in just an article here talking about alcohol is the most dangerous drug of all. Okay, class dismissed.